after party starts
right now. Power up suits and welcome to another episode of The After Party. My name is Will, and with me, as always, my PIC, Nate from the Gamers Guild. What's happening, man?
Not too much. Ready to talk about some of the characters that at first were probably a little bit overhyped and now are probably a little bit underrated.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about these two characters, the husband and wife duo of Proxima Midnight and Corvus Glaive. I think that these are two characters that when they first came out, you're kind of like, oh yeah, okay, Black Order, sure, you know. But then I think that we've seen some pretty interesting plays with them lately, and especially season three of the TTS League. And I know my buddy Andrew over there, he definitely had a fun little play with them. So we'll talk about that going forward. But first, let's talk about this panel to play we had that was released yesterday, and that was the sensational She-Hulk. Did you happen to read that, Nate?
I did give it a read through once, so I might misspeak on some random bits and information here and there, but I know of her, yes.
Yeah, I did give that a read through as well, just one time, but it sounds pretty interesting, and I'm really interested to see her card. The only thing that I can say concerns me when reading that panel to play is it might sound like Hulk is no longer useful. Maybe. But we have to see the card first to kind of see how it all plays out. But six threat character that rolls a ton of dice. So we shall see.
Yeah, that's she sounds extremely similar to Hulk with some fixes. And my guess is she's also probably got a medium movement on that 50mm base, which is going to make her a little bit faster than her cousin as well.
Exactly, which should be a lot of fun. She sounds like she's going to be tanking a good bit of damage, kind of got some bodyguard type abilities, some throws, obviously. It's just, I'm really excited, and sounds like she can roll a ton of dice. So, very interesting character. And also, there were some quote-unquote leaks, I guess, solicitations, whatever you want to call it, about some upcoming characters. And we're not really going to get into that because we like to wait until AMG kind of talks about certain things that are unreleased, or until they start talking about things that are that they haven't announced yet is when we like to start talking about them. But we are aware of it. And some of it sounds really interesting, and there's a couple that I am beyond excited for. What about you, Nate?
Yeah, no, I've looked over it, and it looks like it's somebody's pre-order sheet from a store, the store side of things. And it looks like there are some pretty cool things to come, and a couple of them were not 100% sure what they look like, what they entail, but I'm excited for most of them, and I just hope that they don't hit all within like a 3-month period, because my wallet will cry and I will cry with it.
Yeah, no joke. Let's spread these releases out just a hair. Just a hair. Just give me like a month in between each one. You know what I mean? And I don't mean like how they've released monthly now. I mean like, you know, every other month. But whatever. That's neither here nor there. So now, Nate, I think we're ready to dive into these characters. What do you think?
Yeah, let's talk about the other deadly duo in Marvel Crisis Protocol.
So first up, let's talk about Proxima. And before you played any games, Nate, what were your thoughts on Proxima Midnight?
I thought she was strong. She is strong. She has a lot of solid attack power behind her. She has attack diversity. Not really any attack consistency, but being able to also have some defensive play with her superpower of martial prowess and some invulnerability. All across the board, she seems pretty solid.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar thought. Was solid three-threat character. I like the long move. Defenses are average, but then you've got that martial prowess, which is pretty good. But then layer onto that the invulnerability, where being able to reduce that damage. I mean, that's a solid character. I don't think we have any other three threat characters other than Iron Man that has an invulnerability type thing. I mean, I guess you could say that Crossbones has damage reduction, but you have to pay for it. But just a straight damage reduction like this, I think it's just her and Iron Man.
Yeah, no, Iron Man is the only other one that I am familiar with who has anything like that. And really, mostly, other than Iron Man, it's something that has stayed within the Black Order affiliation.
Yeah, and so I'm really interested. I really like that about this character. And I'm interested to see if they do that going forward on some other characters as well. But she's a character that once I got some games in, and once I played a lot against her more than with her, but I did play with her a few times. And she's a really versatile three-threat character, but she's also not as versatile as some of the other three-threat characters we have. Like, she's really strong from range. Like, I really like her Quantum Starburst, but, you know, you got to get that power on her. And the best way to do that is with the strike. So, you know, maybe get some damage on her, and then you can get that Quantum Starburst off. But I really, really like that attack. I think that's really good. But she's built in such a way that if you're trying to play for the Quantum Starburst, well, you're going to probably do it after you've either moved some power around, or now that we have, like, Brotherhood and stuff, put some power on her from stuff being destroyed, then you're able to get that Quantum Starburst off a little sooner. But if you're trying to play for that, you've got to kind of play off, and it's kind of this weird weird space that she's in, because if you want her extra survivability, well, then Martial Prowess, you want her to be within range too. And then if you want her to get the most possible gain for power, well, then that's also range two with her strike, where she has a Wild Pierce, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have this spear throw attack that kind of allows you to go from range three and then place within range one. And it's, you have to do the place. It's like Beast's,
ambush.
Called? Yeah, that ambush ability. But this one, it's just a straight, you have to do it when the target, when it's done. So like, she's got that good range, but also she wants to be up close. So it's kind of an interesting, like, duality of the character, I feel like.
I don't think it's too much of a duality. She just has her big attack has some range on it. I think everything else about her character wants to be in that close combat game. She has a spear throw that lets her get in there in place of a charge-like ability. Her strike has Pierce, which is always going to be a good thing. And then, as you already mentioned, Martial Prowess, proccing as long as she's within range two of her attacker.
Yeah, and I really like Martial Prowess. I think that it's obviously one of those abilities that's like, well, hopefully the dice work out. But at the same time, if the dice do work out and you're able to throw two damage on someone, that's so strong. I mean, I've been playing against Mystique and Punisher lately, and their ability just to get two damage onto people is stupid good. It's stupid good. So I do like Martial Prowess quite a bit. And I guess now we've been talking kind of about a little bit about what she does well. You mentioned that she gets into the fray, but what else does she do well, Nate?
She hits good. I mean, again, Pierce on a strike, also has energy attacks for the attack diversity. She has some survivability, and really she just pairs well with her counterpart because of their extremely unique reactive ability.
Yeah. So she does pair incredibly well with Corvus, and that's a question I'm going to ask in just a minute, is about the utility of this character without Corvus. But I think one of the things that's really interesting is she really has a good damage output and is a pretty decent assassin-type character, which, if you missed our last House Party Protocol episode, we talked about different character archetypes or roles, and we mentioned assassin as kind of one of those roles. And I think that she's a pretty good assassin character, like we described over there. And I think that the reason why is, I mean, she's got her two free attacks are five dice. Usually what we see is one of those free attacks being a four dice and the other one being five. So I think that that's a really strong thing. And then the ability to I like that. And also like her long move. So she can pivot to an objective running role if you need her to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like doing with her when I've played her is doing spear throw to get close to someone and get closer to an objective and then not have to use any movement to do that. And then after I do that, I can grab an objective and then double move away. Like, I like that kind of play with a character like Proxima Midnight. And I think that she opens that kind of stuff up. If you're allowed to double move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what are her faults, though? And I think that really it's just she has a harder time generating power, I think, than some other characters. But she doesn't have a lot to spend it on other than Quantum Starburst and Martial Prowess. So I don't think that's too big of a deal, but it is a fault, if you will. And I think another fault, in my opinion, Nate, and let's see what you think about this, is that I kind of always want her with Corvus. And she's cheap enough to where you should be able to do that. But at the same time, I don't really like playing her outside of playing Corvus. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think the fault that she has is that she performs best with Corvus. And if you don't have Corvus, she definitely feels a little bit lackluster for what you lose there. And then obviously there's just so many huge benefits to having her with Corvus, the double activation, being able to maintain priority with that, the absolute damage that they can cause early in the round. I guess the only downside I will hold against her is that to reach her full potential, you need a possibly 4 or 5 threat character to go along with her.
Exactly. And I think that that's fine. Like, I think it's perfectly fine to have a character that fits in a niche like that in this game. But it's also like when we have so many other 3 threat characters that fill a variety of roles, that it makes it to where she kind of gets left off of my roster more often than not, because I would rather have a Hawkeye or a Valkyrie or, you know, so many of these other characters. I mean, a Mystique at this point, you know, there's just so many that, even Miles, like Miles being able to make people drop objectives is more utility overall than Proxima. But if I have Corvus in my list, well, Proxima just opens up so much more. And I do think that this is a fault that is unique to her, because I feel like that to truly unlock her maximum potential, like you said, you've got to have Corvus, but I don't think Corvus needs Proxima, if that makes sense.
Again, benefits from it, but he's definitely able to hold his own a little bit better, even if she's not there.
Exactly. So, yeah, but I do like Proxima. I think she's a fun character to play because she moves around a lot, has some fun attacks and stuff. So if you haven't checked out Proxima Midnight, I would highly recommend it. And I'm going to ask you another question, Nate. This is a bit of a new one. So again, I reference our last episode of House Party Protocol, where we mentioned the skill floor, skill ceiling discussion. Instead of saying a character is a finesse character or something like that, we're going to talk about how difficult they are to play just on a casual level versus they're in the hands of a good player, upper echelon. So skill floor, if it's a low skill floor, that means they're pretty simple. You can kind of put them on the table, have some fun. High skill floor would be that you put them on the table and you aren't really familiar with them, then you're going to have maybe not a great time. And then obviously high skill ceiling would be that if you are a really good player, you can really unlock some fun things with these characters. So with that explanation out of the way, Nate, how do you think Proxima measures up?
I think she is a very average character there. I do not think that she takes a lot of skill to master to get the most bang out of your buck. She's a pretty straightforward, send her into the enemy ranks and deal damage. And it's also pretty obvious how to best use her. if you are wanting her to get to from point A to point B, and she can spear throw instead of having to use a move action to do that, you have some free extra movement there. So there's not really any big tricks to her or deciding things. Maybe the worst trick of it is, who do I activate first, Proxima or Corvus?
Yeah, that's fair. But I think that she's average. You're right. I agree with that. But for me, it's kind of like looking at it in the skill floor, skill ceiling discussion. I'd say she's a medium skill floor, so not a low, not a high skill floor. Like, she doesn't have a huge barrier to entry to understand what she wants to do. But I do think that she definitely, like, you just look at her and you play her. You might not have the best time if you're not playing her with Corvus. And then if you play her with Corvus, I think it's definitely like you said at the end there, figuring out which one needs to activate first is difficult at times to decide on. So, like, I think that creates some definite choice that you have to look at when trying to decide how best to play this character. But skill ceiling, I don't think she has a particularly high skill ceiling either, because she's pretty straightforward, like you said. So, yeah, I think she's pretty good character, and a character that I like to have out on the table when I can, and that I'm definitely not like to fight against. So let's talk about affiliations now, and let's do the top three that she fits into and the bottom three that she should definitely not go into. And for me, I think, first of all, Black Order, obviously, that's a no-brainer. And then I weirdly like her in Web Warriors. Like, I did a match, just a casual match, and I threw her in a Web Warriors list. And it was fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something I would take to a competitive thing. Like, I don't think it was particularly competitive, but it was fun being able to run her out there in a 17-point match and have nothing but long movers. Like, I literally had well, nothing but long movers except for Miles. I count him as a long mover because of his place, but he's not. I know he's not. But, like, so you've got Miles, Gwen, Peter, Daredevil, and Proxima. And, okay, Miles is your only medium mover there, but he's pretty mobile. So that was a lot of fun. It's not something, again, that's pretty competitive, but it was fun. And then after that, I would think Cabal is a good choice for her. And, again, she's cheap, so you should be able to fit her in there. What about you, Nate?
I think my top three are, one, Black Order. Makes sense. Pretty straightforward. Two, one that I've messed around with a little bit that's been kind of fun, because she doesn't have tons of way to spend her power, and sometimes her Quantum Starburst is overkill, is Wakanda, as a matter of fact, just because of the additional reroll and consistency on either offense or defense, as long as you remember the reroll. But my third one that I really liked her and her husband both in is in Spider Foes.
Interesting. Why Spider Foes?
So Spider Foes already have the ability to the opponent's defense dice, giving a character with a pierce strike on top of that, basically being able to possibly cancel out to two successes of your opponent's defense, is extremely nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely, my guy. That's really good. I like that. So where do you think she just absolutely should never go?
Not a lot of use for her in the Avengers. Not a lot of superpowers to use.
Absolutely.
And the one that she does doesn't really line up super well. Let's see. Guardians.
Yeah,
granted, dice consistency is never bad, but she doesn't have a way to really use all of the winging it tokens she can receive. Let's go with the X-Men.
Which X-Men? Da da da.
I'll say, as a whole, probably both.
Yeah.
She already has some mobility tricks of her own, so Storm isn't going to do too much for her. I guess Storm's cover does kind of help her more when Marshall Prowess isn't active. but that's not a huge boon to her. And again, in the X-Men, with Cyclops' leadership ability, maybe you want to get an early Quantum Starburst off. I'm not sure if that's going to be the best use of his leadership, though.
I agree with that. And I think I will give an honorable mention to an affiliation that she could go into, and that'd be Brotherhood with Magneto specifically. I think that that could be a pretty interesting one that I'm gonna think I might have to try out. So, with that said, any other final thoughts on Proxima Midnight?
No, I think that covers it for her.
Yeah, I think she's just one of those characters that it's like, she's good. But she's not like she doesn't she's not one of these like special awesome utility pieces that we have in this game. So it's like when you see her on the table, I think I don't know. It's kind of hard to kind of get my thoughts out on her in that way, because she's a character that's like when I see her across the table, one, I have only played against her a handful of times, but when I do, I know she can ramp up some damage. But it's also like, well, if I see her across the table, I know I'm seeing Corvus across the table, and Corvus has some combos that are very strong, that are very strong and very scary. So I just think about him more than I think about Proxima. But I would encourage people out there listening, if you haven't tried Proxima Midnight, to check her out. She's a fun character, and she's a little bit more versatile, I think, than maybe we give her credit for. But yeah, have some fun with it. And with that now, Nate, we have a giveaway winner to announce. Yeah. So for those of you that have been listening for a while, you know that we have had a giveaway for all of the X-Men models and for all of the Brotherhood models, plus some measurement tools and a tray to keep those measurement tools in that are X-Men themed. So we've been giving that away, and that has ended officially. So our winner for this giveaway, chosen at random from all the different things, hitting the button, drawing our winner for this giveaway, and it is Robert Morris. So Robert Morris, you are the winner. Congratulations to you. And I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who participated in this. And we would love to hear from you about how you liked using that system versus like random comments on a Facebook post. I personally like this better. It's easier for me to keep track of everything this way, but I want to do whatever makes it the best for other people. So I understand, that can do a lot of different things. So I really appreciate everyone that participated. We had total 1,600 different entries, and I'm really, really happy about that. I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for everyone that participated, and I look forward to doing more giveaways. Part of the reason why we have a Patreon now is so that we can continue to do giveaways. And I want to make sure that we keep bringing that great stuff to you. So hopefully, once we get whatever the January announcements are, we'll do another one. And yeah, it'll be pretty good. So, Robert Morris, I will be in touch with you. Thank you very much. And congratulations on this massive win. And yeah, out there, let us know what you want to see next time. We'll probably do Inhumans next time if that's what comes out in January. I'm not sure, but we'll see. Or whatever. So, yay, yay.
Woohoo!
So now, Nate, let's move on to the man of the hour, as it were, Corvus Glaive. So before playing any games, I have to say, this was a character that I was like, holy crap, he will wreck some face. Like, I really felt like that he was going to be a very good damage dealer, but I also felt like he was going to be kind of a secret objective player with the, yeah, because of, and the, specifically the reason why is because of his ability to move after Deathblow. Like, I thought that that was really going to be good for him to be able to, like, be on a secure, do a death blow from range three, or not be on a secure, do a death blow from range three, move medium after that death blow, and then do another attack to take a secure or to take an extract from somebody if he kills them. So I really thought like he was going to have some secret objective play. And it hasn't really worked out that way, but at the same time, it's still pretty solid, and he does have some decent objective play on scenarios that require you to roll crits, especially if you put him with a reality gem. So we can talk about that in a few minutes, but Nate, what was your thoughts on Corvus before you got him on the table?
Yeah, so at the time that we first got Corvus, we did not have the reality gem. And so I think over time, perspective has definitely been warped with that. But prior to that, I really wanted to have a Time Gem Corvus in the Avengers, getting an extra action for one power. So that was my whole shtick with him, and it worked out for a time.
It did, and the Time Gem's a two-threat addition, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so making Corvus sixth threat in Avengers. Woo-wee. That sounds...
Cap or 10.
That sounds pretty spicy. How'd that work out?
It actually worked out pretty well. He ended up being a little bit power-hungry, just trying to get the glaive's edge off along with the death blow. But really, once you have three actions, being able to lay in with a couple of strikes... is more than sufficient to generate some power for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, he's a hyper good damage dealer. And like you said, not having the reality gem when we first got him, and we didn't even know what it was at mm-hmm. the time. So that was definitely I think, muted what his potential became. And this, I guess, goes back to something we talked about a little bit earlier with the release schedule, where... Because the releases came so hot and heavy, it's kind of difficult to really get everything out of these characters before the new ones come out. And I think Corvus was an example of that, where people obviously know what he does now, but at the same time, by the time the reality gem came out and by the time that it was like, okay, now Corvus is unlocked, there were still so many other new things that had come out at that point that I think it kind of got left in the dust for just how powerful he can be. However, we've seen in a TTS league, and I've seen firsthand from playing with some friends and stuff, of just how strong Corvus with reality can be, and just how strong the Corvus Proxima combo can be. So with that, the things he does well, he murders things. Very well. Like, he is one of the best assassins in the game, and you throw the reality gem on him, which we keep saying that. I don't know if you guys, if somebody out there is listening for the first time, the reality gem allows you to count one skull result as a critical result in a roll. And it's specifically in a roll. It doesn't say attack roll. It doesn't say defense roll. It's just when you roll dice, you get to count a skull as a crit. Not all skulls, but just one. So, very strong ability. And like I said, so what he does well is with that reality gem, he is a super assassin. Even without it, though, he's a very strong assassin. His strike being five dice with a pierce, very good. And I don't think I've ever used his atom splitter. But at the same time, if I need that one power, it's still a decent attack. It's four dice, so meh, but, you know, it's not terrible to get that power. But really, where Corvus's money is made is on the death blow and with a glaive's edge. But that's a seven power combo, but if you play it right, I don't think that he has much of a problem getting that off fairly regularly. And the thing about death blow, once you get a death blow, Nate, and I'll see if you agree with this, once you get a death blow off, like with that four power, and then you get to flurry into a strike, the ability to get a death blow again comes pretty quickly.
Yep. The combination of things lining up, death blow, huge. You do need that wild, which will show up a little bit more than half the time for you, thankfully. But Dice will be dice.
Absolutely.
And it, real quick to backtrack, the Reality Gem, just looked it up to make sure, does specify that it only gets to count a single skull as a critical result in either an attack, defense, dodge, or interact role, which covers a lot of the roles you're going to be doing in a game, especially just with Corvus. But this way, if there's like a tactic card or anything else where you're rolling dice, the Reality Gem will not get to help you there.
Okay, so yeah, I was, I'd say 90% right on that. It's not all the ways you can roll a dice in the game, but close enough. But I appreciate that clarification, Nate. And I think that that just goes to show that, you know, it's easy to know how a thing works and not remember the exact text. And so it's always beneficial to look it up. So appreciate that, Nate. So continue, Nate, on what you
Absolutely.
think he does well.
Yeah, I think you covered it pretty nicely. He is a delete button for enemy characters on the board, especially once you give him said Reality Gem, because Reality Gem in conjunction with a Glaive's Edge means that only one side of the dice is a not successful result on his attacks, and it's terrifying. Now, granted, if you roll multiple skulls, you're a bit out of luck at that point, but hopefully your dice don't treat you that poorly.
Hopefully.
And so it's a extremely just powerful attack synergies. And one of the things that he's really good at that a lot of people were looking for is killing the giant head known as Modok, because he still gets to count blanks as successes.
Yeah, that is probably his one of his most useful tools is being able to count those blanks. It's so good. It's so good. And that Glaive's Edge, I think, is just a really great attack. I mean, we've seen things where counting blanks on defense is really good. And then we've seen Loki be able to count blanks for I am a god on attacks too. But rolling seven dice with a death blow and being able to count those blanks is insane, especially if you have, again, that Reality Gem on him. I mean, you're probably going to have at least one crit. And at that point, the dice become two sides that you can, that have stuff on them that you can't benefit from. Right?
Yeah.
So,
So still a 3 out of 4 chance to get a success.
yeah. So, super good. And now let's talk about where he has his faults. Like, what does he struggle to do, Nate?
For me, this is pretty easy. He does not really have any objective or board control elements other than being a delete button for different characters. There's no pushes, there's no throws. I think he maybe is able to hand out bleed, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like he can put out bleed to me.
I'll say, I'm
But
somebody, oh, I'm probably thinking of Wolverine and Sabretooth with wild Pierce bleed.
yeah, and yeah, you're also so Proxima has a bleed on Quantum Starburst.
So yeah, no, just an utter lack of board control and objective control elements other than just his pure aggressive nature.
Yeah, and I think that really is a fault because while he is mobile, he's very mobile, and Deathblow allows him to get places to continue to do those delete buttons. I think that he definitely requires a good level of play to get to those characters to eradicate them. And I also feel like that. So he's got that Glaive of Immortality, which is the same thing as the invulnerability on Proxima, gets to reduce damage by one to a minimum of one, but he can go down relatively easy. I don't think, like, you're not going to have a lower threat model be able to take him down in one set of attacks, so like two attacks. But like, I do feel like that he can take out, or he can be taken out pretty, you know, pretty decently. He doesn't have any defensive tech. He doesn't have any way to modify his own dice outside of Glaive's Edge with being able to, you know, count the blanks. But
that's only on offense.
Right.
Reality Jim can help, but he's only rolling three dice. And he does have his own invulnerability, but that's reducing one damage. So somebody spikes and you're just not rolling well. There's not really a chance to come back from a poor roll.
Exactly. So I think that he does. I do think he has some decent objective play if you, again, if you use that mobility that he gets from a death blow. But I don't think that's what you want to be doing with him. I think that he is by design the ultimate assassin, and just, you know, go in, wreck face, and try to kill things. You know, if nothing else, get some dazes, and then you turn around and hopefully on the next turn get some KOs because you stole priority by activating Proxima right after him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is, I think, the combo you want. But if you can't get that off, then I think Corvus just feels bad. I don't say feel bad. I don't know. He's really good. He's really good. But it's like he doesn't have any way to make that bad rolling get better. And I think that that is just, that is what sets apart like the quote unquote best characters in the game away. That's what sets them apart from a guy like Corvus. Like Corvus would be up there, but not the best because of his lack of an ability to fix his own dice. So
fix his own dice or just have some sort of additional consistency, which he does have on offense. But if you look at somebody like Thor, who's also 5 threat, he also has a throw on his strike where he can begin pushing people around a little bit. But he also has just a superpower throw where he can make sure to get somebody off of an objective point if that is what is needed.
Exactly. And that, I think, that you nailed it. That lack of a control element on Corvus, even in that throw. And I think that that's an interesting discussion is like, people don't think of throws as a control element, but they really are. Like, yeah, you can use them to damage people, and I do that very regularly, but they're also a way to deny points. So think about that next time you're playing. But with that, I do want to say that Corvus is a really good character, but I don't think I want to use him kind of outside of Black Order or outside of Cabal, really. Like, where else would he go, you think, affiliation-wise?
Again, I like him and Proxima both in Spider-Foes. You just kind of leave the death blow at the door and use his power to make his strike that much more deadly.
I gotcha. Okay. I think that's interesting because I wouldn't have thought about that, but I think that that's pretty interesting because I definitely think that to maximize Corvus, he needs a lot of power. He needs Deathblow, Glaive's Edge. Like, that's, I think, maximum Corvus. Now, when you put a gem on him, he's going to get an extra power during the power phase. So you put the Reality Gem on him, so he's getting 2 power during the power phase. He just needs to gain 2 power from a strike to unlock that Deathblow. And then, like we said, once the Deathblow's online, it can more or less stay there, not guaranteed, but it can stay there. But then getting to that Glaive's Edge part of the death blow is where I think that things get a little tricky, because if you're continually activating death blow, well, then you're not going to likely be able to get enough power to go back and Glaive's Edge it regularly. Mm-hmm. So Spider-Foe's saying, well, we're going to leave death blow at the door and play for the improved strike. I like that. I think that that's really interesting and has some very interesting play. And the Spider-Foes definitely need some objective play. And again, I think Corvus being able to move between objectives with a death blow, even if you're not going to plan on using it all the time, I still think that that could be a fun little bit of tech to put on there. And in terms of where he doesn't fit, I mean, like, Avengers is okay, I guess, but I wouldn't really want to play him there now. There's just too many other good options, especially at that threat level. And don't really love him in Web Warriors. Don't love him. Yeah. I wouldn't play him in Web Warriors at all, I don't think. I mean, maybe. With the Reality Gem, maybe. But I like Strange with Web Warriors better because Strange helps them, helps the whole team. whereas Corvus would just kind of be that Venom role, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know. Don't love him in X-Men either. So there you go. But let's talk now about this combo that was pretty prevalent in, well, I say prevalent. It was around in season 3 of the TTS League, and it was right before the banned and restricted list came out. It was the Proxima rocket boots with Corvus drop off with a doomed prophecy and a all you've got. Did you see that combo?
I did not see that specific combo really at all. The big thing was the rocket boots plus drop off combination, just letting Corvus get in three attacks very easily, very early on without your opponent having a chance to respond. I could see the Doom Prophecy play also being really nice there, especially, I mean, all you've got just being an enabler for that. But and obviously at this point, drop-off is also banned. But
right.
I always saw the Rocket Boots drop-off as a really strong opening play rather than something to hang on to later where Corvus would then have the power to also Doom Prophecy.
Right, and that's kind of the way it was played more often than not. It wasn't done all at once, but once you got Corvus up there with the drop off, and then so it's basically you would activate it. I guess this is all moot now because drop off is banned, but I still think casual player might still be playing drop off. So here you go, casual player. So
if you're a casual player who doesn't want to play casual.
Right, if you want to piss your opponent off. So basically, you activate Proxima. She moves and puts Corvus, takes Rocket Boots, takes Corvus, drops him off. Corvus gets an attack. Proxima gets an attack. Then you activate Corvus, and he gets to do two more attacks. And by that point, he's probably got some power on him. So then one of those attacks is definitely a death blow. And then it opens up some really strong turn one play. It's a really strong turn one play. But now that drop off's gone, it's not around as much. But one of the things that Corvus is really good with is a doomed prophecy all you've got. And doomed prophecy basically means he's not going to roll any defense dice for the rest of the game, but he, for that round of attacks, he adds his physical defense to his attacks. So in this case, he'd have three dice to whatever attack he did. So a death blow becomes 10 dice, right? Which is really strong. And then if you do that, and then you all you've got, which allows him to make another activation and then be dazed or KO'd, he now is rolling potentially 4 10 dice death blows. Now, granted, that's assuming all the power works out to get this over and over again. But either way, he can roll an 8 dice strike into a death blow. If he gets the flurry, it's a really potent combo. If you want to delete models, is Corvus, especially with reality, doomed prophecy, and all you've got. But my problem with that combo is, okay, I lose a model. That doesn't feel good, but okay, fine. I lose a model because there's no way you can survive that, really, unless dice just get out of control good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've lost a model too. And by that I mean, while Corvus is only dazed and I have to do some work to KO him, he no longer rolls physical defense for the rest of the game. So if you play that combo, you better kill two models, because if you don't, I'm definitely going to kill Corvus, and then your ability to steal priority and all that stuff is done. Even with very low rolling attacks, only with him rolling no physical defense, he should go down pretty easily once he's on his injured side. So there is some risk there. It is very strong. It is a very strong play. I encourage people that play Black Order to check it out. It is fun, but it definitely is not, like, it's it's strong and it hurts, don't get me wrong, but it's not like the end all be all play.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
No, I fully agree. I think there are still some really strong Doom Prophecy plays with Corvus, just because he has that flurry on the death blow, and so once you're rolling that many dice, you're hopefully able to chain together a total of at least four attacks there. But it's definitely something you want to do later in the game, maybe round three or four, where really the game can be decided by that play.
Exactly. Whereas before we had the banned and restricted list, it was a very early play that you would want to do. And now it is one, like you said, that I think you save it. You save the threat of it. And once you can make it pop off, it's very strong. So, yeah. And now we did have one question from our Discord, our Patreon Discord. So if you're not already, go check that out. We have a couple of different Patreon tiers over there. It's super cheap. We have fun and we like to chit chat and talk about all the fun Marvel Crisis Protocol stuff on our Discord over there. And I really appreciate everyone who is a member of that Patreon. You guys are awesome and I could not be more humbled to think that you guys actually support this show that way. Like, it's just, it means the world to me. So I really appreciate it. And all the listeners out there, all the suits out there, every one of y'all is awesome. And I hope that we continue to provide great entertainment and content for y'all. And email us at housepartyprotocolpod@gmail.com. Facebook, message us with whatever your thoughts are. Let us know how we can improve the show. I always want to get better. I always want to provide better content for you guys. We've got some really great shows coming up. We are going to be having some really good in-depth discussions coming up on the horizon. So stay tuned for that. But we've got David asking, what does date night look like for the husband and wife? And Nate, I'm going to take this one and we'll see what you think.
All right.
I think date night for Corvus and Proxima looks like, hey, there's a random planet over there. Let's go pillage it. And they go and they kill everybody and they take over. That's date night.
Yeah, I think them going out and challenging strong foes around the galaxy definitely sounds like their kind of date night. And if none can be found, they probably just spar with each other.
Obviously. And cackling maniacally while they do it. You know what I mean? Like, ha, 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 you know?
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, just like, do you not have a maniacal laugh, Nate?
No, unfortunately not. My are all good chuckles and whatnot.
Oh, well, let's hear a good chuckle. Those are good. It's like it's Beavis and Butthead over there.
Absolutely.
I love it. So, yeah. Last thing let's talk about with these characters is they came with some tactics cards that I think are interesting to discuss with these characters. And the first one that I want to talk about is Execute. So this card, it says, when Corvus Glaive targets an enemy character with an attack that is within range one of an allied Proxima Midnight or the opposite, Proxima within and Corvus is within range one, both characters may spend two to play this card. The enemy character rolls no defense dice during this attack. So what do you think of that card, Nate?
I think it's a very good card. And if you have a strategy that is built around bringing Corvus and Proxima, and you know you're going to be going up against either Defenders or Avengers, where characters like Doctor Strange and Captain America, who can just roll an obscene amount of dice, and I guess at this point even like Magneto, this is a card that you bring to break the tank.
Yeah, I think that is 100% what you got to think about. And if you're running Corvus Proxima, you're probably running Black Order. I don't want to say you're guaranteed to run Black Order, but you're probably running Black Order. So this would be one of those cards that I think I would bring in Black Order if I was running this combination of characters. But cards get really tight especially when, like we talked about earlier, you've got Doomed Prophecy, all you've got, now you've got Execute, you might have a med pack or a field dressing in there, and it's probably field dressing, actually, but, you know, so I think things get tight, and this card is definitely niche, but when you need it, oh, it gets good. And I think it's especially potent in the Proxima to, if Proxima's within range one, then Corvus gets the benefit, because with her spear throw, she automatically gets to place within range one of a target. So I think that it would be more of a setup for Proxima to go first, then activate Corvus, then execute in that way. But you have to remember mm-hmm. that both characters have to spend two power to play this card. And Corvus specifically is already power hungry. So you got to think about that kind of stuff when you're playing these cards. The next one is Price of Failure. It's a Black Order specific card, active. Choose an injured allied character to play this card. Other allied characters gain 3 power. The chosen character is KO'd. Now, this is a very interesting card because you're losing a model to gain 3 power on every one of your other characters. How do you feel about that, Nate?
Again, it's a card that has some very niche play, especially because you're able to maybe have a two-threat character like Okoye or Nebula, who is now on their injured side. You activate them late in the maybe like fourth round or something, and then you use this. You KO them before your opponent gets the chance to just finish them off, so you're helping your opponent a little bit, but then you're also supplying power to your Thanos, your Ebony Maw, your Corvus, which can let them have a devastating remainder of the round.
Yeah, and I think that that's really what it is you use it on a character that's about to go down or that is in big-time danger of going down, and, okay, fine, you lose that character, but now you've potentially unlocked some other abilities on this character, and the nice thing about it is it's active. So you get to do everything you want to do with that character, and then, boom, you lose them, and now your other big hitters have more power. So I think that it's interesting. And it's like you said, it's very niche, and it's one that I'm not going to use, or I'm going to use in very specific situations, so I don't know if I want to take it in my eight, but I probably would. I don't know.
If you're running Black Order and you're running a lot of power-hungry characters, it's definitely something you can do. And another kind of interesting play is maybe you pop off with Corvus and Proxima. That's one activation. Your opponent still has a couple of activations. You could play this early in the round and not even activate with that injured character to maintain priority, and then Corvus gets a free Glaive's Edge the next turn.
Ooh, yeah, that's spicy right there. And then the last card we have is Blood to Spare. And this is one that I've never really used, but I've seen some people including it in their lists lately. And it's another Black Order specific card. It's reactive. When a Black Order character would be dazed by an enemy effect, it may spend 3 power to play this card. The character immediately performs an attack before gaining the dazed token. If this attack results in the character removing damage, it is not dazed. So that last line, I think, is a protection, or maybe a kind of something that might come later discussion. We haven't mm-hmm. seen anything like that where an attack can remove damage, but maybe there will be. Maybe someone will have like a vampire type ability. There is Morbius in the Marvel universe, so there's an option.
There is Blade.
As I was about to say, a Marvel character like Blade.
Who may or may not have been. Anyway.
So, what do you think of this card? It's 3 power.
So, on the bright side, you'll usually have that 3 power to spend when you are getting dazed, because you will have gotten the power, much in the same way that Ultron or Ghost Rider, when getting KO'd, would then have that power to play their death-defying tactic card.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, like, you'll have that 3 power, But man, this is niche. It's only when that character is getting dazed, and it, on the bright side, I guess it doesn't limit it to a free attack. I
Right.
don't remember, so if you don't mind reminding me, it can only a Black Order character play this card?
Yes.
Okay, so at that point, you're looking at the potential list, and there's nothing really exciting there. It's a lot of things that you can just save that power on your next turn. So basically, it's like, hey, you can have Corvus go right now, and he can do a death blow right now, or you can wait until next turn, and he can get save that three power and do a Glaive's Edge with that death blow.
Right. And I think that that's really it. Is to me, this card is maybe one that will be more useful in the future because let's not forget, there still are Black Order characters that we have not seen. There's in terms of the Marvel universe, there are other characters that are in the Black Order that we haven't seen yet. So maybe this card will be more useful when those characters come out. But right now, I'm with you. I think it's just kind of, it's not one that I'm ever going to want to use.
Yeah, it's a bit expensive for what it does, and it is a solid effect, especially if you're able to stop another character mid-activation or mid-beam attack or any of
Oh,
those kind
yeah.
of things. But it's also pretty limited.
It is. And you made a good point there at the end. It all depends on the board state, but if you're able to stop an activation while also, like, you're going to be dazed, but then you get to subsequently daze or maybe even KO an enemy character, well, okay, sure. But that's so niche of a use case that including it in your roster, it's one that I don't see doing very often. You know what I mean? So, yeah, with that, Nate, I think that about wraps it up for Corvus and Proxima for the number one husband and wife combo of Marvel Crisis Protocol. What do you think?
I think so. There's not much more to say.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I feel like we've said a good bit. So, Nate, where can people find you?
Guys, you can find me over on the Gamers Guild, as Will has alluded to a couple of times. Make all sorts of different videos, battle reports, character reviews, just about anything I can think of to cover Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Nice, yeah, and definitely check that out. You should have a new battle report coming out soon, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, Friday we get to see the Avengers with a couple of extra mutants in there, going up against Mystique's Brotherhood.
Interesting. Very much looking forward to that. So definitely go check Nate out, give him a follow over there. Make sure to like, subscribe, hit the bell, all that good stuff, because that's what YouTube people do. And also make sure to check us out. We are on all the podcast platforms. If you're listening to this, you obviously know that. But let us know if there's another podcast platform that you want us on. We are working on getting to be on the Nexus thing. So if you know about that, then go check that out. And also, let us know. Yeah, just let us know what you want from us. Because again, we have some plans and we're going to keep doing our thing, but we also want to continuously improve. So make sure to hit us up with that information. Like I said earlier, housepartyprotocolpod@gmail.com. There's also the Facebook Messenger. That's a really great way. I get those notifications right on my phone, so I can just, reply to those right away really easily. And yeah, so hit us up with that. Make sure to check us out on Patreon. We have a $1 tier. It's $12 a year. If that's something that interests you, if you like what we do here and want to see more and have our stuff improve a little bit. Like, I'm saving up for some new equipment to kind of make this process a little easier for me. So that would be awesome. And yeah, I really appreciate everyone out there listening. And congratulations again to Robert Morris for scoring that sweet X-Men versus Brotherhood giveaway. I will be in touch with you very soon, sir. And with that, party on, Nate.
Party on, Will.
And power down suits.